You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Global warming, the ozone hole, global extinction of species, worldwide destruction of forest. That humans can affect the Earth's systems on a global scale is clear. Usually we think of these as negative and unintended consequences of human activity. But recently the idea that we can make massive, purposeful, and positive alterations to the Earth's system has been promoted, particularly in relation to climate change. This is known as geoengineering. To talk about this, I'm joined on the phone by Diana Bronson from the ETC Group in Montreal, which has been tracking this issue for several years. Hi, Diana. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Hi.
What exactly is geoengineering?
Well, there's even a debate around the definition of geoengineering, but we call it any large-scale intentional attempt to manipulate the planet's climate and related systems. So that's the umbrella definition, and then under that we can look at a whole bunch of different examples.
So in what ways is it being promoted to mitigate the climate change crisis? What approaches are being promoted?
Well, I think the dominant discourse that we're hearing these days is it's too late, we've passed the limit, things are worse than we thought, and therefore we need to do some really dramatic things that may or may not include cutting fossil fuel production. Some geoengineers see fossil fuel production and consumption as an add-on, or reduction in it as an add-on, and others want to just replace the whole notion of reducing our fossil fuel use with massive geoengineering schemes.
Well, what would be an example of one of those schemes? Take us maybe into the idea of carbon sequestration.
Okay, well, there's many different ideas floating around about how we can sequester carbon either before it goes into the air or once it's in the air, actually take it back out. So one of the many geoengineering schemes that would fall under the category of sequestration would be ocean fertilization. And there's been about 13 experiments to date in the world's oceans testing this technique. And the idea is you dump iron, or in some cases nitrogen or urea, into the ocean, which is theoretically going to, or actually does, stimulate the increase in phytoplankton, the algae, the small microorganisms on the surface of the ocean, which will then sequester carbon from the ocean, which will allow the ocean to sequester more carbon from the atmosphere, and the carbon that is sequestered in the phytoplankton are hypothesized to sink to the bottom of the sea and stay there safely, all that carbon to stay there safely over the next millennia.
Wow.
So it's an idea in which many things can go wrong and many things have gone wrong. And on that particular technology, we managed to get a ban adopted at the Convention on Biological Diversity last year. But despite that ban, there has been an experiment that's gone ahead, dumping 6 tons of iron off the coast of Argentina just this last few months.
Well, let's look at another one of these large projects or sort of approaches. What's behind this idea of wrapping deserts with plastic?
Well, the idea there, as within many other techniques, is to increase the reflectivity of the sun, or what we call the albedo of the Earth. One of the great dangers involved in the melting of the Arctic is that as snow melts and is replaced by sea, liquid sea, it is much darker. So even less sun gets reflected back, so the warming effect of the carbon in the air is enhanced. So sometimes these geoengineers talk about sort of adjusting the thermostat of the Earth by just sort of playing with the temperatures. We don't actually reduce the amount of carbon that's pumped into the atmosphere. We just reduce its effects. So if you wrap the desert in plastic, in white plastic, you make it more shiny. Even the foreign minister of Bolivia was making a joke, but he referred to painting the mountaintops of the Andes white to replace the snow that's no longer there. or there's other ideas are to whiten the clouds by spraying either chemicals or sea salt into them.
As a general concept, I guess it could seem like these have some merit if the techniques work and they were able to mitigate the major effects of climate change. What's the problem with these geoengineering projects?
Well, you know, they are not all the same. That's a fact, and they have you know, different dangers and toxicities and side effects, and possibly yet to be proven, I'd say, positive aspects to them. You know, it's sort of hard to lump them all together. One big problem is the sheer scale of them. Any geoengineering technique that is being contemplated at the present time needs to be massively deployed in order to have any kind of a dent in the figures we're seeing in terms of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. So, you know, it's not a little local initiative that you're going to do. You know, it's very much the opposite of something like composting or something like that. It has to be executed on a massive, massive scale. For some plants, it will take a whole lot of land, and there isn't a whole lot of free land to be had, to be, you know, where monocultures can grow that will sequester more carbon, or these kinds of ideas are floating around as well. So scale is a problem. Another big problem is there's no governance of the technology right now. It's a free ball game out there. Anybody can play who has money and ideas and maybe or maybe not scientific expertise. And there's a big financial incentive, too, to come up with what looks like the winning technology, not even necessarily the winning technology. It just has to look enough like it to create a bit of hype, to make a bit of money on the stock exchange, or to be accredited, you know, as a green technology and then to be, you know, sold as carbon credits on the international carbon markets. So the fact that there's nobody determining what are the rules, what is allowed, let's have a comprehensive look at this, and the fact that it can be unilaterally executed, just one country, possibly one company, even possibly one individual who has the technology and decides to deploy it, can do so, and there's really nothing stopping them now. We have a few little bits of international law that are somewhat useful. There's certainly the NMOD, which is a weather modification treaty that was signed way back, in the 70s, since the outcome of the Vietnam War. But you know, there needs to be a whole lot more sitting down and looking at what the global implications of these technologies are.
I guess when I hear of you know, modifications on this scale without a lot of study, what I always think of is a kind of arrogance of human beings to think that, you know, we can somehow even predict what all the factors will be. I mean, these you know, a desert climate or even a mountaintop climate is such a complex ecology.
It's so true. It's just so true. And if you, yeah, there's a geoengineering listserv, you can go and listen to the discussions, but the arrogance with which many of them speak about what "quote unquote" we are going to do, you know, is quite frightening, and it's like the sort of, you know, enlightenment ethic of domination over nature, and we're going to, you know, industry's going to beat it, and we're going to master it, we're going to dominate it. It's like it's gone wild. It's just like in hyperactivity in the geoengineering world. It's all about controlling nature, controlling weather systems, controlling the stratosphere, controlling the oceans, and it's all very much driven by a single-minded focus on climate change. And I would be the last person to deny the importance of climate change and the, you know, how important it is that we tackle it. But it's like they're trying to fix it with the very same technologies that got us into this place in the first place.
The Harper government and its allies have promoted the geoengineering technique of carbon sequestration and storage as a way to lessen the impacts of developing the tar sands. What are your thoughts on this?
I think the money that they've thrown at it is largely a PR gesture. It's an attempt to buy time, because Canada is so despicably behind in its targets that it's, you know, it's trying to look good, like it's throwing some money at, you know, universities in Alberta who are going to be doing some of this huge experimentation. I mean, the problem with the tar sands is the tar sands. You know, the problem with the tar that's the problem, is that we're pumping all that out. You know, that's, you know, you can try and mitigate it by sequestering a fraction of the carbon that is going into the atmosphere, and taking enormous risks geologically and with those ecosystems surrounding where the tar sands are so damaged already. You know, it's terrible. But as I'm sure you know, and your listeners probably know, there's a strong movement for a moratorium on the tar sands. And I, you know, there's beginning to be a little bit of trouble about selling that oil overseas. And I think the Harper government has its eyes completely shut, and its ears, you know, to continue in that way.
How can people stay on top of this issue as more of these kind of proposals start to be pushed?
Well, I guess certainly they can check our website regularly. That's one thing that may sound very self-serving, but it's etceteragroup.org, so etcgroup.org. We follow it, and you can sign up for our listserv, and then when important things happen, chances are you'll be informed. There's some fairly good coverage of this in the popular science press and in the environmental press, Science Today or Science Now or any of those listservs. It's starting to be covered in the mainstream media, and that's really quite new. That's dating only from the last year. And the network of geoengineers that exist are on a very aggressive PR campaign to gain credibility, and they have huge funding ambitions for this year, and they want one of the outcomes of Copenhagen, the Copenhagen climate talks in December, to be increased public funding for geoengineering schemes.
Well, thanks very much, Diana, and we will point people towards your website and give that URL again. Thanks for joining me this morning.
All right, you're welcome.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I've been speaking with Diana Bronson from the ETC Group, and to find out more about geoengineering, as she mentioned, take a look at the ECT Group's work, visit their website at etcgroup.org.